trade-offs that we make for ourselves or on behalf of others in terms of spiritual benefit and cost-benefit ratios. So we left off yesterday with the Machlokas, the Beis Yosef, and the Rashba, and the extension of that Machlokas into the Beis Yosef's ruling in Shulchan Aruch, that essentially the questions were as follows. That we've seen a number of answers in Tosfos and the other Rishonim as to how do we reconcile conflicting Gemaras about do we transgress a little bit, take on a small Avera, or however we want to define Avera for these purposes, something less than Lechatchila, and Nesed Rabbanan, maybe even Nesed Daraisa, all kinds of different balances, but do we ever say that you will take on somewhat of a spiritual hit in order to protect your friend, in order to enable him to be saved from a bigger problem? And we saw various answers in the Rishonim. So those answers are important to keep in mind as we consider the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. Right? The Shulchan Aruch rules, based on what he says in the Beis Yosef, against the Rashba, that if somebody finds, Chalila, that his daughter was kidnapped, his daughter has been taken somewhere where she's going to be under missionary influence, and he has to go rescue her. But it's Shabbos, so it's going to involve at least Chum, let's say, and maybe even something more than that. So is that permissible? So the Rashba thought not, because the Rashba thought, he wasn't 100% sure, but he inclined that not, because he thought that's the impression we have from our sugi, Shabbos Daf Daled, that, do we tell somebody to sin for this purpose? So he didn't think so. Beis Yosef, however, disagrees, and he notes two of the answers, at least, in the Rishonim, that are relevant to you. Right? What's relevant? Which of the answers that we've seen so far from the Rishonim are possibly applicable to make this a case where we do say, Chatei She Tzedakah? Mitzvah Rav is one of that, right? We're dealing with very high stakes here. Right? And it has to be very high stakes, because it could be that we're dealing even with Yisuri Daraisa. That Tchumen, on a certain point, may be a Daraisa. And, as we mentioned yesterday, the Mishnah Berurah adds the halacha that it's lav davka Tchumen, but even an actual malacha. So for a malacha on Shabbos, to ever be considered a Yisura Zuta, to ever be considered a small Isser, you have to have some pretty heavy duty Yisura on the other side. So it must be that it's a factor of the severity of what's on the other end of the equation. So that's one element he mentions. What else does he mention?
Call someone else to sing.
Well, that's the whole question. What other svar in the Rishonim is invoked? Right? The idea of pshia, that some of the Rishonim say, the whole question is, we don't save somebody else if it's their fault, if they were pushed. But here, presumably, she didn't do anything to bring this upon herself. So, therefore, that svara doesn't apply. In other words, the only reason Shabbos Daf Daled was saying don't do it is because he was a poshe, that person who left the food in the oven, the bread in the oven. But if there's no pshia element, then we do say it. So, therefore, go for it. So, the question becomes, l'halacha, which one of these svaras is really the key? Do you need both of them in order for this psak to work? This was a discussion the postman had as the machlokas that postman. For example, let's say you have the exact same scenario, but it's not perceived as an innocent girl, it's perceived as a pshia. The person ran away themselves for this purpose. If you view that as a pshia, I think there's some subjectivity here as to what's going to be considered a pshia or not. But there was a machlokas about this in the earlier Achronim, that Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva about this, in Chelek Ches, where he discusses that on the one hand, the Nachal Shiva maintained that it's not about Shia considerations. Because the truth is, we could blame anyone for their own sars. Even if they're sick, you could blame it on their own sars. So, therefore, there's always some element to that. So, we don't factor in Shia, says the Nachal Shiva, and we'll do it no matter what. And the Beis Yaakov disagreed. The Beis Yaakov said, no, but Shia factor is relevant. Again, there's a lengthy tshuva about this in the Tzitz Eliezer. And it's interesting, in the Mishnah Berurah, it's a little bit confusing. In one place, it sounds like in Mishnah Berurah, I think I put all the various Mishnah Berurahs on the Marbot Tumos. In one place, it sounds like he's saying that he does factor in the Pshia issue. So if the other person was Poshea, so then he wouldn't allow even Anissa Darabanan for the sake of the Poshea. Elsewhere, it sounds like he's saying that the Darabanan will allow it even if there was a Pshia. It's called a Magna Brahma in both places. So the explanation seems to be that if the person is Poshea, so then he will allow a Nisa Drabanan if it's also a mitzvah rabbah. It's also a big deal kind of mitzvah, so then he'll allow a violation of a Nisa Drabanan even makom shir. But without mitzvah rabbah, then he focuses totally on the pshia consideration. Again, I think there are some subjective factors to consider in terms of what's considered pshia. Nowadays, in terms of what's considered mazer, in terms of what's considered shogeg, I think a lot of these considerations, halacha maisa, if a shayla like this would ever come up, I think we'd have to think very carefully about it. Wouldn't be too quick to label anybody a poshea without being very seriously reflective about the situation. But just in terms of what the elements are, so these are points brought up by the poskim. Again, I think if the issue is a maisa, you'd have to think about it very seriously. What exactly is the evaluation here? It's interesting to note also, just because we mentioned the other day, the position of the Ritva, that the difference between the sugyas is the Omer law. That in the Gemaras, where it sounds like you do take on a small Aveira, that's because you decide to on your own. And that here, the language is the Omer law, so says the Ritva, means we don't instruct him to. And we mentioned a couple of interpretations of that Ritva. One being that we don't give it official sanction, and the other being that we don't force you to if you don't want to. So here, in terms of forcing you to, Shulchan Aruch paskins, that we do force you to if you don't want to. Shulchan Aruch is very clear that it's not just a matter of choice, but we'll even get Tzedek involved if you decline to go on your own. But just in terms of the other Svara, it's interesting. This would be a good illustration of how the other Svara could be applied, how it would make sense. Imagine, let's say if the answer was no, let's say even, for example, the poskim would say that if there's a pshia involved, the answer would be no. So theoretically, you can imagine somebody coming to a posek, and the posek saying, listen, I can't allow this. That's what it says in the Magen Avraham. You know, I can't permit this. However, I would certainly feel terrible if it was my daughter who was taken off in this situation, you know, essentially making the point that al pi halacha you can't allow it. But somebody who's going to decide to do it anyway, it's very possibly the case that that's the right thing to do, even if the official posek can't come and say that the halacha allows it. At the end of the day, the cheshbon is going to be such that it's going to lead to tremendous kilkul otherwise. So perhaps that's what the Ritva is saying, not the chiyomer law, but that is theoretically the right decision anyway.
As in, there's like a moral prerogative above halacha?
No, not at all. But that basically, this whole sugya is about the fact that the parts add up in such a way that the hit to halacha could be greater if you don't take this action. So it could be that, okay, so therefore it makes sense still to preserve the greatest halachic benefit. But at the same time, we can't call that mutter. We can't come and paskin that that's the right thing. You find this in other places in halacha also, that there are times in halacha vein motor came, there are times where there is a certain action which, at least in retrospect, makes sense, but as part of the halachic system, we can't come and say that it's mutter. Here, in this case, it could be that the system does say it's mutter. But maybe even on the side that it doesn't, maybe that's what the, if that's what the Ritva means, that we don't say omrimbo, but it's still something that's doable otherwise. Again, the Ritva's language is very open, I think, to these two completely unrelated interpretations. So, if that's what he means, I think this just might be an illustration of that kind of consideration. Okay, so in addition to this, so we have the question of the Rama. That the Rama, elsewhere, has a ruling which may or may not contradict this psak of the Shulchan Aruch. What does the Rama say elsewhere? Says that if you hear of a situation where somebody is being forced to do an Aveira, even a big Aveira, so you're not Mechalel Shabbos in order to stop it. So is that in contradiction to this Pesach? What do you think? Is there an issue here? Is this reconcilable? Right, Shulchan Aruch says, be mechallel Shabbos to save your kidnapped daughter from Averus. And the Ramah says, don't be mechallel Shabbos to stop somebody who's being compelled to do an Aver. Stefan?
So, I don't need a contradiction because...
Okay. In good company.
Case, yeah? In the Shulchan Aruch case, it's one Shabbos versus like a million Shabboses.
So who says like that?
Who says like that?
So I do. I'm not that that's not enough, but...
Do the
Ramah does say like that.
And then the Ramah's case is just one Shabbos versus another. The last time Shabbos like so bad, so it's not Kalim.
Okay, so we're going to focus on that tradition. Just mention another one before we get to it, because it'll be a shorter discussion. The Bach says that the issue is, and this is interesting also in terms of our sugya, that the concern is that in the case of the Ramah's other psak, the person is being forced. He's going to do an aver ba'onis. So he's like, okay, I'll do an aver ba'onis, so then he's not going to be chayav anything anyway. He's going to be completely blameless. But maybe our concern in the case of the daughter that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about is that she'll be convinced to convert, to give up the Torah, and then she'll do all kinds of errors willingly, and we're more worried about the consequences then. That's going to be a serious issue, which is interesting because it brings up the other issues that we saw from our Gemara, from Shabbos Daf Dalet. How much are we factoring in the consequences? How much are we factoring in the omshin? You're saying that the Aveir is all we're looking at, or the Onesh is significant. So if there's going to be a Korban, then that'll change things. If there's going to be a Misa, that'll change things. And how exactly does Onesh factor in? So the fact that, all right, we'll call it an Onesh, you'll be off the hook, but still an Aveir, there's a lot to consider about that. You may remember, again, the Yom Tosis. It says that even if we tell the guy who did this B'mezid, to put the bread in B'mezid, that he has to leave it in, so he's not going to be Chayiv Misa because he'll be considered honest at that point. Honest with Takanas Chacham. Essentially, I even saw one Sefer that asked the question. So that's the reason, Davka, we should, Davka, not let him take it out to save him. Because if we let him take it out, we should tell everyone that this is the rule, even if they have no interest in taking it out. Because if they're interested in taking it out, and they tell them that they can't, so then you could say they're honest. So maybe that'll be the rule across the board. They'll be an onus if they leave it in no matter what. So now nobody will be chayiv for baking anymore because we'll call them anusim because they're not allowed to interrupt the process. It's a question whether that really makes sense or not, but it's an interesting consideration. Stefan?
It's interesting that we don't consider this girl who's persuaded by her captives or captors as onus, even though like nowadays we say like, oh, you know, everybody's... whatever, because...
All right, so let me address that for a second, and yes, I'm sorry, I'll take a question in a second. But the point's an important point. And again, that's why I think that if the issues were lamaisa here, I think anybody who's involved in any situation practically that's about these issues, you have to think about it very carefully, how you would address the situation, because I think you're right. That first of all, the manenu, there are many other considerations in terms of what's considered to be shogeg, what's considered to be mezid, what's considered to be a person's responsibility. And your point is essentially that even if she ends off living a life of religiosity for the rest of her years, but she's willing at that point, but she's not really willing because it's all a function of whatever influence is there. So how you'd evaluate that, I agree, is a very complicated issue. So
I'm just saying you can learn from the Bach that we shouldn't say everybody's onus now.
Right? Maybe. Possibly. No. Again, the Bach, as you pointed out, sort of, the Bach is not necessarily the most authoritative answer on this question. But theoretically, it's a part of the discussion. And I think Lamaisa, you'd have to be very carefully reflective about how the factors come in. It could be that the Bach is talking about a very specific case where she's really very strong-willed and she's going to do what she wants, and this is just going to give her a little bit of a push in that direction, but it's all really her responsibility. But maybe somebody who's really brainwashed, and we're talking about a daughter who's 17 years old or a daughter who's 4 years old, you know, a daughter who's going to be deprived of any opportunity to learn anything, and therefore she's really going to be considered an onus. We're talking about a daughter who's at a different stage of moral development. So I think there are a lot of nuances here. Again, so be very careful in terms of the halacha l'maisa, but this is certainly all part of the discussion. Joseph?
I was also going to just
Right. So again, I can't emphasize this enough, that if any of these issues were being dealt with, you have to figure out carefully how these parts come together. But so the Magen Avraham's approach to this issue is essentially what Stefan said, that the concern here is that the Rabbah function is very different. That this is not a one-time thing. In the case of the Rabbah, it's a one-time thing. A guy is being forced, you know, very isolated incident, he's going to do this Avera. Okay, so fine. So why should you do an Avera to stop him from his Avera? Probably also, especially since he's honest. So why should you actively choose to do an Avera from the Bach as well, to stop him from his one-time Avera bonus? But if it's going to be a constant situation, if this is going to lead to a collapse of the whole Shabbos system and everything else, so then that becomes a much bigger deal in the spirit of Mitzvah Rabbah. So perhaps that should be viewed differently. It's interesting, parenthetically, there is a Ran in the beginning of Yuma, not really the beginning of Yuma, because the riff on the Ran is all about the last part of Yuma, so the beginning of the end of Yuma, but it's Daf Dalet in the pages of the riff in Yuma. So there is a Ran over there, has a discussion about the question of, let's say you have a situation of Pikuach Nefesh. And so you have somebody who needs to eat on Shabbos, and he has a choice. He could either shecht an animal. He doesn't have any kosher shechted animals, so he could shecht an animal in order to be able to eat on Shabbos. Or he could, there is existing food that's already shechted, but it's not kosherly shechted. It's nevelus and treifus. He has non-kosher food he could eat on Shabbos, or he could shecht an animal on Shabbos. What's the preferable route? What would you say is the preferable route? And we try to minimize averus even on behalf of Pikuach Nefesh, and we say, I think we discussed that earlier in the year. We always try to take the path of least averus. So, what's better? Jonathan?
I guess if you shecht it, you don't even know where you're going to get it. It might turn out to treif anyway, so there you even have a suffix. Maybe
okay. That's a cheshbon to throw in. What else would you invoke in this discussion? What's the better approach?
Are you? I'd say that non-kosher food is considered worse to eat, because the Torah prohibited it. So there's nothing in essence wrong with food shechted on Shabbos, Yom Tov, because it's just a function that you're not allowed to have to shechted the food, but the food in itself is not prohibited.
Now you're bringing up an interesting judgment that this is not what I would have thought, but what you're basically saying is that shechted food on Shabbos, food shechted on Shabbos is not an issur chatzon. You did an Avera, but now once you did it, the food is the same as every other food. While the non-kosher food is inherently bad, and especially the idea that we have when it comes to kashrus, that we say that forbidden foods have a deleterious effect on the soul, so maybe you'll say better to avoid the forbidden food no matter what, and food shechted on Shabbos wouldn't have that same status. Interesting, that's not even what happened to the Moskana I was thinking of. It's an interesting cheshbon. That's something to consider as well. Hi.
No, just just question that one. But you can't just eat food that you like. Food that came about through the Dover Israel. Even this question, you can't eat it.
Right, but that would be a siag, or that would be a knas or a banan of Maisa Shabbos. So that wouldn't say that the food itself is treif.
But the food. But if the issue is talking about things like Yisurim or something that you're going to be over, so then maybe you are going to be over something else, even if you eat it, not for that reason of trade food, but because of your.
But presumably you'd categorize that differently. Besides the fact that it's an Issa Drabbanan versus, let's say, an Issa Deraisa, which might be relevant, but the food that's inherently bad, you could see how that has an effect on the soul, let's say, if that's the notion, while food that's inherently okay, but happens to have been served in a prohibited fashion, doesn't necessarily have the same effect. But again, it's an interesting point, but neither of those are either the Havamina Maskana was expecting. That the Havamina was expecting to say is that, well, look, Shabbos is an Issa Skila. Kosher food, for the most part, is a lower Issa, is an Issa Lav. So based on the normal logic of Machilana Soha Kala Kal Tchilu, the mission that says that we go for the lower level Issurim first in terms of what kind of trade food to give. So here you can say, okay, so better I should violate the Issa Lav of giving non-kosher food, then the Isra Skila of Chil Shabbos is clearly a more stringent prohibition.
What kind of food is it?
Let's assume it's either...
What's
Karius? Karius is Chelev, I'll say. So let's assume this is a normal Isra Lav. It's Basel B'Chalev, or it's in the Velev. Treif, any of those are normal Isra Lav. So the Ran says a different approach. And the Ran says, no, you shouldn't just only factor that in. But there's another element here. That if you're going to shech the animal, that's only going to involve one Maisa Isser, one Aveira, and it's done. It's not factoring in all the other Cheshbonos to how it's going to be prepared. But let's, I guess, just look at that one element. While if they're going to eat non-kosher food, so every Kizayis is going to be another violation. Every step is going to be something more. So, therefore, he essentially asserts that there is a quantitative effect that has a qualitative impact. That because you're adding in the numbers, you're adding in degree, that changes the nature of the Aveira, which is an interesting point. From Yosef Engel, who we mentioned many times, who often has these kind of philosophically oriented questions in his Svarim. He has these essays that are sweeping shots kind of questions. So in the Sefer Lekach Tov, where, for example, we've mentioned his essay about the Siag Doraisa and the like, so he also has an essay there about E Riboy Hakamos Machria Esaichus. What does that mean? It means, do we say that Riboy Hakamos, that if we increase the quantity, Kamo, if we increase the Kamos, so does that ever affect the quality? Is that machria, the eichus, what it is, eich? So do you ever say that the character of something is changed by the number? So the more times you do the aveira, it becomes a worse aveira. So this Ran seems to say yes. He seems to say that multiple acts of this isser lav of non-kosher food will add up to worse than one act of chilul Shabbos. So that cheshbon is a relevant cheshbon here as well. It's what the Magen Avraham is saying. Or maybe he's saying all the more so because you're dealing with a clearer equation because it's the same aveira many times over. But in any event, that you have this aveira happening many times, that's going to be specifically significant.
How does he come up with that? If you see the ocean or such?
So the math is more complicated because how do you know when you draw the line? How many Yisurei Lav does it take to add up to one skill? That's a fair question. That's why when they're run a little more straightforward, you're dealing with the same aveira. So you say, okay, we can factor in the quantity as a multiplication of the same number. You're right that the math is harder when you're dealing with unlike systems. So a separate question. Definitely encouraged to read Yosef Engel's essay about this topic. He goes into many writers about this question. But it's just interesting here how we're factoring in this question of numbers and how it may make a difference, this question of quantity. Now, what's also very significant is that the Magen Avraham bases his psak on a different Gemara. Where does the Magen Avraham get his psak from? Sorry? Yes, that Gemara. That's the Gemara in the end of Maseches Yuma, on Daf Pehei and Beis, where the Gemara talks about the din of Pikuach Nefesh B'Shabbos. And there, the Gemara says that one of the possible svaras, not necessarily the winning svara, which is something we'll talk about in a second, but one of the possible svaras towards this idea of Pikuach Nefesh Doche Shabbos is Chalel Alav Shabbos Achas Kidei Shiyishmeru Shavasis Haivet. That we say that if somebody is looking at dying because of the Shmir of Shabbos, so why should we make that sacrifice? Why should we say, die for Shmir of Shabbos? Why don't we say that if you want to be Shomer Shabbos, you'll be Shomer many more Shabbosos if you survive the Shabbos. So therefore, it's worth sacrificing the Shabbos on behalf of all the future Shabbos. Which, parenthetically, is interesting about whether you look at Shabbos as a mitzvah saseh or a lo saseh. But that's, you could say, well, because I'll never be Mechallel Shabbos again if I die now, so it's not necessarily a straight cheshbon.
Okay, I don't think you get points for that.
Right, but it's about getting points, or it's about the benefit for Shabbos. So that's parenthetically another interesting question.
It's also like reminiscent of, like, being involved in like God's, you know, like the Gemara with Chizkiyahu, like
so the guy with fish bones.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Well, if you're supposed to, you know.
Yeah, that guy, the Gemara that Stefan's referring to, is that's also a, you know, it's interesting. It's not invoked so much in this context. One, but it's an interesting question whether it's relevant or not. The Gemara he's referring to is Gemara Brachas and Daf Yud. The Gemara says that when Chizki was sick, so Yeshayahu went to visit him, and he told the Chizki that he's in trouble upstairs because he didn't fulfill the mitzvah rabba of Puravu, because he chose not to have children. So Chizki said, I saw Baruch HaKodesh, I found out through my prophecy that the children I would have had are not going to be worthy, are not going to be good people. Something along those lines. So the response Yeshaya has is V'hadde kavshid rachmana l'amalucha, that God's secrets are not your business. That which is commanded to you, that's your job. And that's the whole story. It's not your job to make these kind of calculations. So that's interesting Gemara on so many levels. It's interesting in terms of how does it impact the fact that it comes up specifically in this context of having children, where very often cheshbonos like this are involved. It's a particularly interesting kind of question. Whether it's relevant to other trade-offs, it's a fair point to bring up, whether that's the kind of issue that the kind of cheshbon you have the right to make. It seems that part of the element there is that if it wasn't for his Ruach HaKodesh, the conversation wouldn't have gotten started. That essentially Yeshaya is saying that it's not your business to look into the future and to play God and decide how all these parts are going to play out. Now, just because you think you know what's happening, you think your Ruach HaKodesh has told you the whole story, that's not a way we fulfill our religious responsibilities. But if it's something that's a more obvious kind of situation, that it's clear that the trade-off here between all the Shmira Shabbos and this Shabbos, you know, that's the kind of thing you don't have to be a nubby to figure out. So to some extent, we do have to make cheshbonos clearly in terms of what all these sugyas are telling us. To some extent, there are cheshbonos that are more clear and present. And that's probably a distinction, but it's an interesting point to bring up. Hi.
Might we say that the Gemara in Yoma about the pikuach nefesh might be different because it's pikuach nefesh,
mm-hmm.
and that's very different than saving life, which is like saving a world, etc.
As opposed to the
spiritual extinction might be different.
Correct. So that's the chiddush. You see, so it's interesting that the Gemara has two possible makaros here. So one marker is Chalel of Shabbat Achas, and the other marker is not just Gemara marker.
It's like three.
Well, there's also another possible point. There's two that emerge as leading candidates for Chai Behem, right? For Chai Behem, Velo Shem Buspa. So the idea of Chalel of Shabbat Achas, it may not be the dominant svar. It seems like for Chai Behem is more likely the svar that we paskin like. Although, as many svarim point out, it seems that they're both necessary in order to highlight certain elements. Rabbi Shlomo Worman, Zechus Hadik Lebracha, in his Sefer Sheiris Yosef, in Chele Gimel, Tzimim Gimel, so he has a whole essay about this question. He deals with a question, it sounds like he was asked Lemaisa about a question which is essentially the Shulchan Aruch's case, the Rashba, the Shulchan Aruch's case. It seems like an almost identical situation. So he has an essay entitled Hatzalah Misakana Rubanis. What exactly is the status of Hatzalah when it's not from a physical danger but it's from a spiritual danger? And he essentially suggests that the whole idea of the Chai Behem, that Gemara is working off a premise that is established elsewhere. That we already know there's a din of Losamar al Dam Reacha. Losamar al Dam Reacha, which tells us it's an Aveira to stand by when somebody else's life is at risk. So that is what tells us that Klal Yisrael is all one united whole. And he makes reference to a quotation from the Avnei Nezer, we alluded to this the other day, that the Gemara says, Arvus only really began once we entered into the land of Israel. So, not that it only applies in Israel, but it only started when we entered the land of Israel. And the idea being, apparently, that that's what ties us all together, that's what makes us into a nation. And then from that point on, even outside of Israel, even in Galus, we're all connected as one unit, as one entity. And therefore, now, a Gemara that says, V'chai behem, which should have been talking about you personally, right? It doesn't, V'chai behem doesn't mean that you should have to save somebody else. even in the physical sense. But once we say that we're all connected, we're all one part, so now the drasha of Achaybehem makes sense even towards others as well. And then that becomes one of the key cheshbonos, that if it's all, we're all connected, like part of the, one of the possibilities we mentioned yesterday, so then these types of considerations, there's Surah Rabli, Surah Zutta, big deal, little deal, all that makes sense because we're looking at it as if it's you. And then everything flows from that. Now what's particularly fascinating, if you wanted to read it inside, if you had a chance to see the wording of the Rambam. All right, so just it's worth looking at together. Exactly how the Rambam puts it. This is in Hilchos Mamrim, Perek Beis, Halacha Daled. Says the Rambam, talking about, in general, activities of Beis Din, Takanas of Beis Din. It's worth reading the whole parak. Like, for example, actually, just to start a halacha before, to see the context of Halacha Gimel. He's talking about Chazal, let's say, contradicting the din of the Torah, something like that. Or at least an earlier takana, let's say, and he writes, "V'med devar mahmurim, v'devar shel asra osan kedei lasa siag v'torah, el kishar dinei torah, d'mal shirol bezin ligzor v'asan osa siag, and pashu yisurim b'chol yisrael, l'im bezin godl achi achol achim, and l'atir v'fil agadl m'rishom." He's talking about how one bezin interacts with a psak from an earlier bezin. And then Halacha Dali says, "V'yesh l'bezin l'akor, af devarim elu l'fi shah, Afal Pishu Katan Min Harishonim." A bezin can temporarily uproot something of an earlier bezin, even if it's a smaller bezin doing the uprooting. Shaloi Yu Gezeros Elu Chamurim Midivrei Torah Atzma. Because these earlier Gezeros, the bigger bezin, they're not more chamur than the Torah itself. And what's the story by the Torah itself? Shafilu Midivrei Torah. Yesh L'chol Bezdin La'akro Haras Shah. That a bezin can uproot even a ruling of the Torah itself on a temporary level, on a temporary basis. Ketzad bezin shorah l'chazik hadas v'la'asol siyag. They see that they have to strengthen the religion and they have to make offense. Kedei shlo yavru ha'amal divrei Torah, so that people shouldn't violate the din of the Torah itself. Makin v'onshin shlo ben shlo kedin. They can make punishments, they can do whatever they see is necessary, even outside the rules of the Torah. But they don't do it in a permanent way that's going to establish the halacha like this and say that's what the Shmuel Guru says. And so too, if they see on a temporary basis, levatel mitzvah saseh, that they have to negate a positive mitzvah. Oh, la'avor al mitzvahs lo saseh, even the kumvi aseh, because you see he said the fisha. We'll talk about that in a second. Even to violate a prohibition of the Torah, kedei la'hachzir rabim ladas, in order to return the populace of the whole to religion, o la'hachzir rabim Yisrael, or to save many people from the Jewish people, milikasha l'dvar ma'cheriv, so that they shouldn't stumble in other issues. Then osen lefima shetzricha hashav. Then they do whatever the moment needs. What's that like? Keshem shaharofe choseh yodo al raglo shozeh. Just like a doctor may amputate a limb, may cut off a hand or a leg of someone, kidei sheyichle kulo, so that that person should survive. Kach bezdin moirin bezman min hazmanin la'avor al ksas mitzvos lefi shah. So too, a bezdin mupaskin from time to time, to violate some, a little bit of mitzvos, temporarily, kidei sheyaskaimu kulam, so that they should all survive, they should all endure. Now here's a key line, it's already very interesting, but here is a very key line, kiderech she'amru chachamim harishonim. This is like when he talks about the Rishonim, who's he talking about? Chazal, right? You may say that the Gemara said, kiderech she'amru chachamim harishonim, Chalel alav Shabbos achas kidei shu yishmor Shabbosos harbe. Right, so that's fascinating. Everything the Rambam said there was interesting, but especially he says that's what the Gemara means when it says Chalel alav Shabbos achas, which again doesn't necessarily endure as the official source for pikuach nefesh tocha Shabbos, but apparently the svara is still a valid svara, and I'll say more about that in a second. So that's essentially a temporary Migdar Milsa amputation emergency decision to save the bigger goal by making a smaller sacrifice here.
Meaning,
that's
what, sorry.
Yeah.
Meaning it's temporary every time it comes up. It's a
right.
one-time thing every time.
Correct. Now, again, the temporary part, and we'll mention more about this in a second. So we're familiar, we talked about the other day, about the Gemara in Yavamas. It says, Yeshkoach lakor v'shei v'al tasev. Right, that Chazal have the authority, for example, to tell us not to blow shofar on Shabbos and the like. And we always said that that's only true if it's passive, if it's a mitzvah saseh they're telling us not to do. But they can't tell us to do averus. But the Gemara there does say that there is a possibility of even kumbi aseh, even telling us to violate averus, if it's harasha migda milsa, that it's a harasha. It's a temporary decision. L'migdamil, so they have to protect. They have to take a step or else things are going to collapse. So then that's theoretically possible. So says the Rambam. That idea, that's what Chalel of Shavuos Achatz is telling us. So in that context, there is a very fascinating essay by Rav Shechter Shlita in the Sefer Be'ikvei HaTzon in Siman Gimel. So two important contemporary essays we just recommended in the past few minutes. Rabbi Warman's essay in Sheris Yosef, Gimel Mem Gimel, and Vikvi Atzon, Siman Gimel. You should try to read both of these if you can. So there, Shechter goes on to explain. The essay is officially titled something about the Mitzvah Rabbah, that whole cheshbon that the Rishonim talk about, and then he gets into this point. So we know, I mentioned in the Mar Makomos, the Gemara Maseches Nazir, right? That the Gemara there talks about the idea of Gedola Aveira Lishma, Mimitzvah Shalom Lishma. That sometimes there is a superiority, there's an advantage to even what is an Aveira that's done for the right reasons, that's done Lishma, when compared to a mitzvah that's done for the wrong reasons. And the Gemara mentions a few examples of this. And so one example is the story of Yael. So in that context, as Shechter points out there, that so she was an Ishus Ish. So she essentially violated Arayos, which normally is Yahar Goyado. Right? So this is a very seasonal reference. Because this is the same cheshbon that we have by Esther. Right, and when it comes to Esther, so even though Esther acted for Pikuach Nefesh, but it's very possible that what she was involved in was Yehar Goyavar. We were showing him in Sanhedrin and the Sugi, Yehar Goyavar, they were trying to talk about Esther. The Gemara talks about Esther, but the Gemara asks it from a different angle, so we showing him, ask why Esther is not a problem for other issues in the Gemara. Was she involved in Arias? Was she not involved in Arias? That's a question that the Rishonim talk about in Sanhedrin and Daphai and Dalit. So there is approach in the Rishonim, which might be the halacha maizah, the same kind of story of Yael, that yes, it's Yehar Vayavor for yourself, but in terms of saving Klal Yisrael, if the whole people are on the line, the whole nation is on the line, so then even the halacha of Yehar Vayavor might not necessarily be the dominant theme. Again, in the framework of L'migda Milsa HaRasha. So the Karen Oru over there in the
Gemara, she should give up her life just for her. But
right, so normally, if it was Arias that she's involved in, so normally Arias is Yehar Goyavor. So why are we praising her? Right, and maybe ask her the same question. Again, the Rishonim try to figure out in Sanhedrin whether she was involved in Gilead Arias or not, but it sounds like you could ask the same question possibly about Esther. So there is an attitude that, yes, Yehar Goyavor means for yourself, but there is something bigger than that, and if it's the Hatzalas Klal Yisrael, so that might be an example of something bigger.
Should you say every time this, so the whole Mishra Matzah's Klal Yisrael is a Horasha of the time, mm-hmm. You're saying every time this situation would come up, we would put in this Horasha, so doesn't that take away from that?
No, because every situation is going to be its own kind of situation. Right? So there's no rule on the books that Gilui Arayos doesn't apply in situation X. It's that every question would have its own calculus to it.
And this would end up being the answer.
Right, so there's no permanent situation where Gilui Arayos doesn't apply. As opposed to, let's say, blowing shofar on Shabbos, where Chazal apparently permanently said, don't blow shofar on Shabbos. That's now the standing rule in the books. Here, this won't be the standing rule in the books, but there could be a circumstance where, if that's really what's going on, that would still, if really Klal Yisrael is on the line, that would be possibly the appropriate attachment. So if that's the case, so then there is an interesting calculus here. So then the Shechter goes on to point out that the Karen Ora in his commentary to Nazir, the Karen Ora was the classic Afron, is the brother of the Shuvah Mishkanes Yaakov. It was Rabbi Yaakov of Karlin and Rabbi Yitzchok of Karlin. So the Karen Ora writes that this Aveira Lashma idea is only valid Harasha and Migdam Elson. That also has to be under these conditions, only to save a major breach. So, as the Shechter goes on to note, that it's not a coincidence, apparently this is the same language that you find by Yesh Koach B'dei Chachamim Lakar Davar Minatoru B'kum V'yasei, that situation. And this is what the Karen Ora is telling us, is that it's the same sugya. That idea of Yesh Koach Lakar Davar Minatoru B'kum V'yasei, if it exists, that's not about a Koach of Bezin. Bezin doesn't really have the Koach to tell you to do Averis of the Torah, against the Torah. Maybe they do have the Koach to tell you to skip a mitzvah saseh. They do have the Koach to tell you don't blow shofar on Shabbos. That is a detail of the authority of Bezin. But they don't have the Koach to tell you to do Averis. But there still is such an idea of Aveir Lishma and doing the math here, Chalel of Shavas Achas, of the amputation svara that the Rambam brings up, and then he goes on, the Shechter, to note the Rambam's language. So that seems to tell us that separately from that, there is such a consideration. So then he goes on to say a fascinating thing, that when the Gemara about Pikuach Nefesh on Yuma Pehei has the two psukim of V'chai Bohem and Chalel of Shabbos Achas, says we need two separate makoros because there are two separate reasons to be Mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. One is V'chai Bohem, that's simply a practice in how the system works. And second, there is Chalel of Shabbos Achas, which, he says, is identical then to Chatei Kadeshi Yizake Chavercha. That's all the same Shvar. It says that this is essentially the logic of Chatei Kadeshi Yizake Chavercha is the Shvar of Chalel of Shabbos Achas. And therefore, the Gemara needs to tell us both because there are conditions where the Chai Behem wouldn't tell us the whole story. So, for example, all of these other situations where it's not literally Pikuach Nefesh, but the Svara applies, so the Gemara is telling us there's a validity to that as well. So, for example, spiritual Sakana, where the Chai Behem wouldn't apply, but the Svara of Chalel of Shabbos Achas is still a valid Svara. Or the whole discussion the post can have, which I won't get into now because it's too much of a side point, but the question of Chilul Shabbos for Hatzalas Uber, to save a fetus. It's not necessarily a life yet. We don't necessarily have L'chai B'hem Svara. Maybe we would have Chalel of Shabbos Achas Svara. And it's a whole discussion of the Rishonim. So the application of the Pikuach Nefesh logic to situations which are not purely Pikuach Nefesh in a technical sense, so that's where the Svara of Chalel of Shabbos Achas becomes relevant, so the Gemara brings both, even if the Maskana we say that V'chai Behem is relevant to actual Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos situations. It's interesting, the Gemara there also talks to Gemara Nazir about the very little Shema, goes on also to talk about the daughters of Lot. So there is an interesting discussion which couples far bring, and Rashad talks about this as well, that Reb Chaim Volozhiner is quoted as saying something which has a strong svara to it, even though it's just a problem in terms of making the Gemaras work with each other. But that Chaim Volozhiner, I think Ruach HaChaim, says that whatever endorsement the Gemara is giving to what the daughters of Lot did, that they had a relationship with their father in order to keep the world going. They thought the world was finished, it was just them left alive. So that type of Aveir Lishma says that's only applicable, it's only endorsed on any level, because it was Kodem Matan Torah. So Kodem Matan Torah, you don't have a formal Isurim, so then everything is consequentialist, as the philosophers say. Everything is defined based on what the results are. So if this is what's good for the world, so then it makes sense to do it. but after Matan Torah, so then that's not necessarily a viable approach. It's just an interesting idea, just parenthetically. For example, you know, the question comes up sometimes that how could Yaakov marry two sisters? If there's an Isser in the Torah to marry two sisters, and the Avos kept the whole Torah, so how could you say that how was he allowed to marry two sisters is against the Torah? So there are a number of answers, and some of the answers would be that Yaakov realized that whatever reason the Torah prohibits marrying two sisters doesn't apply in his case, and there's a longer discussion just alluding to it quickly. But normally we say, ain't Dorshin time to decry. You don't have the right to say, well, this pasuk is for this reason, therefore I'll go based on the reason. But that's true for us. We have a Torah, so we have a krah, so we have to follow psukim, even if we don't think the time to decry matches. But the Avos, they didn't have a chumash, they didn't have a Torah. So the only svara why they would keep the Torah is because they tapped into the time of the krah. They tapped into the reasoning of the psukim. So then they followed it for that reason. So if there was a situation where the time of the krah, the logic of the pasuk indicates something else, it makes sense to do that. But it's not the same judgment for us because we actually have psukim, which we're bound to, so we can't say darshan time of the krah. So it's a little bit similar to what the Chaim Lezner is saying here, that before Matan Torah, you can do everything based on logical, moral intuition. But once there's actual dinin, so then things might change a little bit. Vinny?
They're all shvatim, like, married their sisters. So that's
married their own sisters, married their sisters, Menahem.
Married their own sisters.
Not necessarily.
She married Tina.
So that's a little bit, you know, I think.
But assumingly, they even married to the sisters. I mean, it seems that they all married their sisters. That would seem to exclude the example of what logic can come up with that says, oh, well,
not necessarily. I think I'm going to work first with the case that they're actually looking, because it's just easier to put our finger on. Go beyond that is a little bit out, even further outside the scope of what we can try to address today. But again, that whole point is just a tangent itself, but just to say that it's in sync with what the Chaim Lezner is quoted as saying, that there's one system for making decisions before you actually have a Torah that says these are the rules, and it's not necessarily going to carry over to a situation where we actually do have rules. However, as then Rav Schechter notes, sorry, this is what Silberstein quotes, which is kind of Lezner in one place, is kind of authoritative. But as Rav Schechter notes, it doesn't really work then with the Gemara. The Gemara clearly is transmitting to us that there is a notion of Aveir Lishma that does seem to have relevance even after Matan Torah. And he quotes there that Sefer Kesser Rosh, which kind of Lezner is quoted as qualifying it a little bit, that he didn't really mean to say that there never is such a cheshbon after Matan Torah. There is such a cheshbon, but it's just much more rare, and it's much more specific, which would also, again, make sense that before Matan Torah, so we could be completely consequentialist. We could say, all right, whatever is the right move for the situation is what's going to dictate. But after Matan Torah, there still might be circumstances that may say emergency action, but we're in a much tighter framework because we have actual rules. So he also goes on to say, we'll just mention one or two more points from his essay, that he goes on to say that, so when the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, having mechashev schar mitzvah keneged hafseda, that you should have somewhat of a mathematical attitude towards mitzvahs, what's the schar, what's the loss, there it seems to mean also that even evaluating mitzvahs against each other, that sometimes there's a need to figure out what is a bigger deal, what is a smaller deal. And then he goes on to say that to whatever extent the Aveir Lishma concept applies, says there's one very important difference between this and other dinim in the Torah, that the Lishma is Likuva. That there are other mitzvahs where we want everything to be done Lishma, but as the Gemara says, La'olim yasak adam b'tar mitzvahs afilu shalol lishma, that we would certainly recommend a person should be involved in mitzvahs even if it's not motivated by the purest of motives. But that's tar mitzvahs. One's going to take the aveir lishma angle, so it's all completely contingent on the lishma, and any deficiency in the lishma, you're left with just the aveira, and of course that's a very high threshold to consider. That itself is very scary. All right, so here's the story. So we're almost out of time. We're not 100% finished with this yet. So I'll tell you just we have left a few minutes left, but it's not going to change our schedule at all, that what we now still have to consider, just for a few minutes, and we'll probably do this tomorrow. We'll do this together with Parsha, probably make time for both. So we'll do Shlishi Vayikra, and then just say a few more of the Halach L'maisa considerations of this very major sugya, including the question of positive mitzvahs, trading off positive mitzvahs on behalf of somebody else's positive mitzvahs. You've seen some of the Maror Makomos about that. There are a few Magen Avrams about that, you know, which say different things in different places. What exactly are some of the considerations? So maybe we'll just spend a few more minutes then together with Parsha. And then again, we'll stay on the schedule that I mentioned before, that by the middle of next week, we should be ready to start Chazara, and then have our Shekhinah a week after that. Okay, Jonathan, we're down for us?
Great.